you can hardly miss the headline. Governor okays millions for stem cell research. Front page of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. As a resident of Illinois, this interests me intensely. $10 million of state money directed to be given to medical research facilities for stem cell research. We're going to be talking about this executive order by Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich to fund embryonic stem cell research with Peter LaBarbera here in the first 20 minutes of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in numbers 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Following that time with Peter LaBarbera, we're going to be spending some time in open lines. Now, we didn't get to this yesterday because time did not permit, and we were taking your phone calls on a different subject, but PBS has a Religion and Ethics Weekly program, an excerpt from that on the Emergent Church. We're going to be playing a bit of that and stopping and starting reacting to some of the things said there by the proponents of this new church movement. Now, when I say new, all of the Emergent Church advocates out there begin to tear their hair out because, of course, it's not new. They've been doing it for years. We're just now noticing it. Well, let's notice it a little bit here in about 25 minutes on Issues, etc., and we continue our conversation on the Emergent Church. Bob Leakle will join us at the 4 o'clock hour, a 25-minute conversation with him on one of the sacred cows, one of the many sacred cows of the Word Faith movement, God's promise of prosperity. Bob is a former Word Faith pastor and co-founder of Discernment Ministry International in Detroit, a regular guest here on the program. Picking up at 4:30, an hour-long conversation with Pastor Mark Sell. He'll join us here in Studio A to talk about dealing with a terminally ill loved one. And then, in the last half hour of the program, our good friend and regular guest, Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute, joins us to talk about two things. First of all, euthanasia, of course. He is expert in that matter, but he also has written recently about some of the activities of PETA, the animal rights group. We'll see what he has to say in the last 25 minutes of Issues, etc. Our call-in numbers again, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Peter LaBarbera joins us, executive director of the Illinois Family Institute. Peter, welcome back to Issues, etc.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, this deeply concerns both of us. We're both residents of Illinois. What did Governor Blagojevich authorize through this executive order?
Well, this is an incredible story, Todd. The governor, working with the leadership of the General Assembly, snuck in a $10 million expenditure for stem cell research, including embryonic stem cell research, which actually contains cloning, uses cloning as a technique. They don't call it cloning, but it is cloning. And the governor says it's not cloning, but there is cloning in this executive order.
Is this specifically for embryonic stem cell research as opposed to adult stem cell?
I believe it's not specifically only for that, Todd, but it does include that. And what's incredible about that is the state legislature, of course, as you know, Todd, had several times rejected taxpayer funding for stem cell research. So for the governor to come and bring it in through the back door, not only is wrong because this sort of research is immoral. You don't harvest human beings to help other human beings, but also it breeds cynicism for the whole process when you do the sneaky tactics to get what you want done. That's not how democracy should work.
So explain to us again how this was, you've said several times here, snuck in. How is it snuck in?
Well, okay, Todd, and I don't even fully understand it myself, but there was a provision for a small provision for funding the Department of Public Health, and it talked about research. And then this was done through that provision calling for, you know, the funding of research. So in other words, they budgeted $10 million for research at a particular hospital, probably with the leadership knowing all along this is what it's going to go for. And then Blagojevich, the governor, cited that and said he will use this to form this regenerative institute which will make Illinois a leader in stem cell research.
All right, here's the argument that was put forth by the governor himself in a written statement. He says, we cannot allow our citizens to suffer when relief may be available. And to expand on that, someone is certainly saying, look at all these lives that could be saved or improved through the promise of embryonic stem cell research. Your response, Peter?
Well, Todd, you know, it's such a slippery slope. you know, there's lots of, even if you can improve, could improve somebody's life, you don't do it through unethical, immoral procedures. You don't take, human life begins at conception. We know that. The DNA proves that. So if there is an embryo, that is a potential fully adult human life. We don't harvest embryos in order to help other, even to help other human beings. My heart goes out to people who suffer with these diseases. It's horrible. I mean, I have a brother who has Down syndrome. Now, that's not one of the diseases. That's not a disease, but I know how it is. You want cures, but you do not cross the line into unethical procedures and practices to get those cures, and that's what he's done here.
All right. The other argument is made from an economic standpoint, and that is, look, California decided on a $3 billion initiative to help bring research into the state, and that means a boost to the economy. Of course, by the time it's all said and done, it will be $6 billion in federal money that will be paid to attract research into the state of California. And the argument is made similarly here in Illinois, and that is, look, we're going to fall behind if we cannot attract this kind of economic boon to our state.
Right, and this is just another this is another red herring, I think, Todd. We should say that there has been ample evidence that adult stem cell research and umbilical cord research is working. There's no ethical problem with that, Todd, and that's another irony through all this. They're pumping money into embryonic stem cell research, which involves, you know, they talk about, I think the word is somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is really a euphemism for cloning. But there has been no proven results from that, and yet that's what they're sinking all the taxpayer money in. The thing that has proven successful is adult stem cell research. It's there's been a number of diseases that they've had successes with, and now the umbilical cord research. There is no ethical problem with this. So why is it that the liberals are pushing so hard to use taxpayer monies to fund this unethical research?
Can anything be done to undo the governor's executive order? I know that there's a special session of the legislature that is intended to, or at least hopes to, take up a debate on this issue.
Well, they you know, there could be a law passed which would deny state funding, taxpayer funding to this research. But, you know, we predict that the leadership in both the House and Senate will not do that. I mean, we will try. Of course, we will lobby for it. But you get a feeling through this that the deal was done. I did have the wording here, Todd, by the way. The budget had a provision, quote, for grants and related expenses of hospitals and universities for scientific research, unquote.
So that was the provision under which the governor, as you say, snuck in this $10 million
in
funding.
Yes, it's Section 40 of Article 40, Department of Public Health, of the budget bill, which was SB 1548. So this breeds cynicism in my view, Todd, because you know, nobody knew. The Republicans sure didn't know. The Democrats, I suppose the blame goes to the Democrats here. They crafted this budget on their own. It was their leadership. They did not involve the Republicans. There was no bipartisanship, and this is what comes out of it.
So the bottom line here, does this mean that taxpayer money, whether you want it to or not, taxpayer money to the tune of $10 million will be going, for the residents of Illinois, to embryonic stem cell research?
Yes, you and I and every Illinois citizen is now paying for this immoral research.
Well, will this be an issue next year in the gubernatorial race in Illinois?
I think it will, Todd, and I think it even goes beyond just the ethical issue we're talking about. I think the what a lot of people are realizing is that the governor is really reckless in the way he uses his power. We saw earlier that he did a different sort of executive action, which would basically force pharmacists, pro-life pharmacists, to sell morning after pills, even if they believe they're abortifacients. So now that in that instance, that was clearly in violation of Illinois law, because Illinois law has a right of conscience provision for those pharmacists. So he did that. We saw the governor working with the legislature to pass the gay rights bill in a lame duck session in January. And they worked that through. I think we're seeing time and time again the Canadian imports of the drugs as well, Canadian drugs. The governor uses his power recklessly and, I think, very politically to try to appease his constituencies.
Does this decision by the governor and the action he took, does it represent where Illinoisans as voters stand on this issue, because there's stuff in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch about Illinois as a California in the middle of the country with reference to California's funding of embryonic stem cell research.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. I think that's where the more radical left-wing elements would like to take us, Todd. I don't believe it for a minute. They could not pass stem cell in the legislature. Illinois remains a pro-life state. This is one of those cases where they get what they want through anti-democratic means. I don't think Illinois is a California in the center of the country. Now, maybe parts of Chicago are, but not the whole state of Illinois.
So you say it's a pro-life state, and I'm a bit incredulous. I know that our listeners might be as well, saying, look, with a governor that gets elected like Rod Blagojevich, yep, who obviously feels that he can with impunity do these kind of things against the position of life with a legislature, what's the breakdown there?
Well, I'll tell you, it is a pro-life state because you look at even a lot of the Democratic legislators in Chicago are pro-life. Where they're being had, and I think the Democratic pro-lifers especially, Todd, is the leadership. Mike Madigan in the House is manipulating the process. He tries to throw some bones to the pro-lifers so that they don't look as radical, so that the party does not look as radical as it is at the top. And I think that's the problem, Todd. The leadership is pushing this stuff, and it's becoming harder and harder for the pro-life Democrats, you know, south of I-80, to say that, you know, we are pro-life, because they are being led by these guys at the top who are pushing agendas that cannot be called pro-life.
So what's next? What is to be done next when it comes to embryonic stem cell research in Illinois?
I think there'll be a lot of education. People will be educating folks on how adult stem cell research is the stuff is the research that's actually getting results. This embryonic stem cell research does involve cloning. We'll be doing education on that. And, of course, probably at the veto session, there will be an effort to curtail this action or to override it. I'm not really bullish on the success of that, Todd, because I think that this was a done deal. It looks to me like it was done through Madigan working with the governor's office. I mean, we even heard now, in retrospect, it's like hindsight is 2020, where they thought they might have called up stem cell in the last days of the session of the legislature, but they didn't. And maybe we know now why they didn't, because they had this little trick that they were going to use with Blagojevich doing the executive order.
So what can the average Illinoisan voter do?
I think the average voter needs to alert their representative, House and Senate, to oppose taxpayer funding of embryonic stem cell research, which includes cloning, especially with taxpayer funding. That's urgent. Let them know how upset they are that this is now going to be done in Illinois.
IllinoisFamily.org is the website for the Illinois Family Institute. IllinoisFamily.org. Peter LaBarbera is Executive Director of the Illinois Family Institute. Thank you for being our guest, Peter.
Thanks, Todd. Can I mention one more thing?
Please.
We have our marriage initiative is going full bore here in Illinois, where we're trying to pass a marriage amendment or a referendum calling on the legislature to define marriage as one man, one woman, and you can get that off our website as well.
Will that be taken up in the special session in September?
No, it's a voter referendum. We need to get 283,000 signatures by next April, and then that would put it on the ballot in November, and it goes around the legislature because we've been blocked in the legislature.
IllinoisFamily.org. Peter LaBarbera, thank you again for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd. God bless.
Well, yesterday we had this ready to play, and I'll tell you what, this is very interesting. This emergent church movement is really a hard thing to pin down. We've had several conversations on it. One tremendous conversation with Mike Horton. We also talked with Shane Rosenthal about it and others as well, as well as hearing from Brian McLaren, who is one of the principal architects of the emergent church movement. Some audio sound bites from him. Well, lo and behold, PBS, they have this program called Religion and Ethics Weekly, took up the subject as well. Now, you know that when the media begins to take note of a movement, it is in full swing. What is the emergent church? The best way to know is to let the principals themselves speak, and that's the strength of this excerpt that we have to play for you here. We'll stop it occasionally and want your reaction as well to the PBS Religion and Ethics Weekly program as they try and sort out for their audience what the emergent church movement is. I want you to listen for a couple things here, okay? First of all, just ask yourself this question. How is this as opposed to, say, the church growth movement or any other movement that swept through the church, any other fad that's come and gone in the church. How is this different? Is this really different in any material, significant way, or is the emergent church movement just more of the same? Here's the PBS Religion and Ethics Weekly program.
In a dark sanctuary filled with votive candles, fast-paced images flash across video screens. Participants come forward to write their names on a wooden cross on the floor. At the altar, a DJ with a computer mixes the music to set the mood. Welcome to worship for the coming generation. More and more Christians say the usual ways of doing church no longer resonate in a contemporary postmodern culture. Seeking to fill the gap, a growing movement called the Emerging Church is developing new forms of worship and theological questioning for a new cultural context.
Christianity is just simply not a stagnant belief. And I know that that comes as a very hard concept for some people to put their minds around or for people to accept. But Christianity has never been stagnant and has never been about uniformity.
But critics fear some parts of the movement may be heading in a dangerous direction.
You keep moving farther out and farther out and farther out until the whole cultural shift that is sometimes characterized by the label postmodern begins to domesticate what the Bible is actually about. And at that point, it becomes more than troubling. It becomes really a threat to historic Christianity.
The emerging church movement began several years ago as a conversation among evangelical Gen X leaders who were alarmed at church dropout rates among 20s and 30s. About the same time, a pastor from Maryland, Brian McLaren, began writing about what he saw as a growing disillusionment with the way evangelical Christianity was being practiced.
So it's very exciting coming together of some of these younger leaders and some of us a little bit older saying, this is our world and this is the future, and the Christian faith and our individual churches, we've got to engage with it and deal with it.
All right, now this is pretty common. I paused there at the end of McLaren's comments because McLaren is the man when it comes to the emergent church movement. Not everyone follows his direction that he's trying to send for the emergent church movement. Not everyone buys into everything McLaren has to say. In fact, that would be a good place to begin with the emergent church movement. It is eclectic. You know what that means? It means to just kind of take a little bit from here and a little bit from there. It is eclectic. It is a grab bag approach, a buffet approach to Christian tradition, history, and yes, when it comes to Brian McLaren, even Christian theology. He's written several books on the subject, and he's written several books that are near the subject of the emergent church movement. In fact, we're hoping to get Brian McLaren on for an interview sometime in the future here on Issues, Etc. But being eclectic, the emergent church movement, at its very essence, is almost impossible to pin down. When we did our interviews and we basically reacted to much of what Brian McLaren had to say about the emergent church movement as he would like to see it emerge, we immediately were receiving response from people saying, no, Brian McLaren doesn't speak for the emergent church movement. Well, who does? Well, this guy over here. Oh, okay. For what part of the emergent church movement? Because it is eclectic, because it gathers from every different corner what it wants and kind of leaves aside what it doesn't want, the emergent church movement, you know, it's a little bit like Eastern Orthodoxy in this sense. Only in Eastern Orthodoxy, their church fathers are all dead, and in the emergent church movement, their fathers are all alive. But a little bit of what Brian says, a little bit of what this guy over here says, a little bit from the Ooze website, a little bit from that website. So whenever you say, here's one of the problems with the emergent church movement, someone will say, no, that's not a problem because I'm an emergent church person and that's not what I believe. So we're left with something that's difficult to analyze, which is why there's more than just one voice here in this PBS special, Religion and Ethics Weekly, on the emergent church. Another thing you should note about the emergent church movement is that the word emergent or emerging says it all. If you ask Brian McLaren a question like, what is the church? He'll look at you quizzically with a grin on his face and say, that's a wrong question. The question should be, what is the church becoming? And he said it there. It's all about the future. This is our world. This is the future. And the Christian faith in our individual churches, we've got to engage it and deal with it. That sounds great. It sounds like, hey, let us see where the world is at and make sure that we're not talking over their heads or talking past them. That sounds great. But the emergent church movement isn't only doing that. You can't really say what the emergent church movement is or what it will be because everything's always in process. Everything. Worship, theology, preaching, you name it. It's all in process. It's all in the process of becoming. And it never will actually become because by the time it becomes something, it'll be on its way to something else. It's, try not to be too harsh here, and judge for yourself as we listen to this. It is much like, since it's always evolving, it's much like going on a trip where you have no real destination. You're just along for the ride. Here's more of the PBS special.
They formed a loose network named Emergent to discuss what it means in today's world to follow Jesus and to reach out to others. Their discussions exploded over the Internet, especially through several lengthy and ongoing blogs. The network now sponsors national conventions and offers resources, but emergent leaders still resist becoming institutionalized. Many vigorously deny that it should even be called a movement. Call it what you want, the emerging church is having a big impact across denominational lines, but there are no easy labels. Participants have called themselves postmodern, post-conservative, post-liberal, post-evangelical, and post-Protestant. Professor Scott McKnight of North Park University in Chicago is closely monitoring the emergent conversation and its participants.
It can't be simply defined, it can't be simply categorized, and it's causing no end of frustration for people who would like to have tidier boxes. This is the way they want it because they believe the gospel should have a local expression.
Solomon's Porch is an emerging church that began 6 years ago in Minneapolis. Its pastor, Doug Padgett, was one of the early emergent leaders. The church meets in the round and has couches and recliners instead of pews.
When you sit on a couch as opposed to a bench or a pew or something else, you just sort of have this sense that you're supposed to talk to that person because who do you sit on a couch with other than a friend? And so it implies a relationship.
Now, here is one thing that I have found in common with most churches that are doing the emergent thing. They don't like pews. Now, the church growthers didn't like pews either. They put in theater seats. The kind of seats you would find at Warrenburg or AMC or any place else. Comfy, some recline, cup holders, but still individual seats, which says a lot about the church growth movement. When they took their theology to its natural expression in the way that they put together their churches, many of them probably started with folding chairs. That seems very folksy. But when you get enough money to kind of put in nicer furniture, what do you put in? Theater seats. That's the church growth movement. How do you know you're in an e-service? How do you know you're in an e-church? No pews, no folding chairs, no theater seats, couches. Couches. Do you remember these things, these modular things they used to put in your house, the couches that went all the way around the room? Kind of a feng shui for the emergent church. We'll be right back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It's true. Every Christian desires a better understanding of the Bible. What is the key to rightly interpreting, understanding, and applying God's Word of Holy Scripture? As simple and as old-fashioned as it may sound, that key is an understanding of our sin and God's grace in Jesus Christ. In other words, the Bible's message of both law and gospel. For a better understanding of God's Word, check out our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today. You can find the book at one of two CPH bookstore locations in St. Louis, one at 3558 South Jefferson in the city, the other on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Look for the CPH bookstore signs. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. It's called Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today.
Listen to this Global Minute to learn one reason why France is steeped in secular humanism. The French celebrate Bastille Day this month. People in the late 1700s grew tired of the king and arbitrary rulings and imprisonments. After a series of events in 1789, the people of Paris rose up and stormed the Bastille, the state's prison. Today on the French embassy's website, the event is described as proof that power no longer resided with king or with God, but power belonged to the people. Those theories came from intellectuals in the 1700s. Official church membership has continually declined in France, while people have sought spiritual answers through the occult and Eastern religions. But some thriving churches in France remain, so pray Christ's love and power will continue to work through them. Make prayer for the nations a priority with tips from the website missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. I remember the Erector set I had as a kid. Some contraptions I built worked well, others didn't. An infinity away from childhood play is the Discovery Space Shuttle. After 2.5 years, NASA is ready to return the shuttle to space. Newly designed struts, carbon panels along the wings, new actuators in the rudder speed brake. Does anyone know what that all means? Only rocket scientists. And yes, this is rocket science. Failure is always possible. In the universal scheme of things, there's God, perfect, unerring, totally different than us. And then there's everything that comes from mankind, not perfect, given to err, and given to build marvelous things that can fail. Jesus once talked about mechanical failure. For some reason, a tower at Siloam collapsed, killing 18 people. Self-righteous people assumed the 18 died because God was punishing them for some sin. But Jesus said, I tell you no. Unless you repent, you too will all perish. We have all sinned, and so death threatens us all. Confessing sin, receiving Christ's forgiveness, only that is eternally fail-safe. So when you get into a space shuttle or a car, go to the Holy One. Deliver us from evil.
Do you want more of God's grace? Village Lutheran Church in Ladue is a Bible-believing church faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community that cares with a vibrant, historic Christian liturgy. Village Lutheran Church is located at 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue. www.villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, 314-993-1834. We're talking about the emergent church movement here during an hour of open lines with you, and we're hearing from the PBS Religion and Ethics Weekly program that talked to some of the principles of the emergent church movement, trying to sort out and define exactly what it is. Is it just another fad in the church? It starts, well, an emerging opinion seems to be forming to that effect. One place where the fads in the church, and they will come and they will go, are taken note of but not bought into is Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, a proud underwriter of Issues, etc. Well, what are they training men for? Not to follow the fads of the church, but to follow the church where it really is to be found, in the preaching of God's word and the administration of his sacraments. Now, those things don't come and go like the fads. They've been around for 2,000 years, and they're old and they're boring, but they are, in fact, what the church is all about. For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155 is their number, 1-800-481-2155, or go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the statue of Martin Luther. It's actually a beautiful picture of a silhouette of the statue of Martin Luther there on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. You know, there are people out there looking for the church. They think they can't find it. Where is the church? It's emerging. Is it around the corner? I don't know. Is it in the future? Maybe so. It's right here, where God's word is preached and his sacraments are administered. There's nothing sexy about that. It doesn't sell books very well. You can't sit there and engage in speculation about what the church will become when you understand the church that way, but you do end up with the church and not something other than the church. Okay, so what's different in the emergent church movement besides the furniture? They hate it when you ask questions like this. They just do. Because, well, as I said before, the church growth movement brought in theater seats, and that was supposed to change everything. I don't know what it's supposed to say. But apparently, gathering on couches as opposed to a bench or a pew or a theater seat implies, according to Pastor Padgett, a relationship. A relationship. Here's more from PBS.
Why do you worship this way in the round as opposed to, you know, a more traditional model, which is everybody looking forward?
We're trying to say something about where power lies in our community. And so to meet in the round says all of these people matter.
We gather not simply to be a blessing,
but seeking to be a blessing.
Every member here has a say in what happens. They don't call it a Sunday worship service. It's a worship gathering, and it happens on Sunday evenings. Padgett doesn't preach sermons. He leads discussions. No question is off limits.
There's a sort of a comfort in knowing that, one, I don't have to have the answers, and that there aren't necessarily answers.
Padgett says their community reflects the contemporary culture.
Before he goes on, it certainly does. Their community certainly does reflect the contemporary culture. That says it all. You know what the woman said there? Now, she's not named. There's sort of a comfort in knowing that, one, I don't have to have the answers, and that there aren't necessarily answers. In other words, it's kind of comforting to know that, number one, I don't need to know, and number two, I probably can't. That's a very nihilistic approach to church, isn't it? I know what's comforting about it is that if there are no answers, we can just sit around and opine all day long. We can pool ignorance or knowledge or whatever we opinion. And as long as we're all facing one another and sitting on a couch and the guy isn't preaching but leading a discussion and no questions are off limit, well, what kind of questions? Like, am I a sinner? Is that question off limits? Have I offended God by my sin? Well, it's comforting to know that there's no real answer to that question. That's an odd sort of comfort. You know, I wonder how comforting that would be on Judgment Day, standing before Christ on his judgment throne, and he's just letting you sit there. He says, oh, no. I've done away with the throne. Let's come sit on the couch. His judgment couch. And judgment isn't a good word. How about a discussion couch? Let's sit down together. And Jesus says, so, why should I let you into heaven? Well, you know, I don't really have an answer for that, Jesus. And it's comforting for me to know that there isn't necessarily an answer to that question. Where did you learn that? Or when Jesus asks his disciples, who do you say that I am? Peter probably would have done better to respond, well, I don't know. I might know in the future. I do think that the answer is emerging. But we've got time to sort these things out, which is what we do. So Jesus, give us some time to sort it out. And in the meantime, it's comforting to know that there may not even be an answer to your question. By the way, we are trying to schedule an interview with Brian McLaren, who is one of the leaders of the emergent church movement. We've been turned down recently, just for your information, by the publicists of Joel Osteen and Tim LaHaye. Joel Osteen's publicist actually hung up on my producer, and Tim LaHaye's publicist was much more polite but still refused an interview. Hopefully, we'll be able to get Brian McLaren on. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Oh, one other thing before we go on. You may not have noticed this when Pastor Padgett, one of the interviewees here, that's Doug Padgett, who's a pastor of Solomon's Porch Church, one of the big emerging churches that's very influential. When he's asked, why do you worship this way in the round, as opposed to, say, in a more traditional model where everyone is looking forward, listen to this answer, what he said. He said, we're trying to say something about where power lies in our community. That's an odd word, isn't it? Power. Not one that you hear Jesus using a lot when it comes to his description of the church. I mean, there's not a lot to be said for Jesus' philosophy of power. The first shall be last, the last shall be first. A powerlessness. But we're trying to say something about where power lies in this church. I mean, I'm just wondering, since when is power an issue in the church? Okay, so far we have what's different. I remember I told you to ask yourself that question. What's different from any other fad that's been sweeping through the church? Different furniture. So far. So what's different besides the furniture?
Padgett says their community reflects the contemporary culture.
We are people who tend to think we matter and our voice matters and our opinion matters. Even if we're not all that educated, even if we're not as qualified as someone else, doesn't exclude that voice from the conversation.
Individual emerging churches may look different, but they share many characteristics. Most are casual, with a big emphasis on the experiential.
It's not just a matter of coming and sitting in a pew and enduring 50 or 70 or whatever minutes of observing something happen. But it's saying, I want to experience God. I'm interested in coming into an experience here.
There again is McLaren. Now, this sounds great, very broad-minded, but did you notice the little dig that he managed to get in there? This is a movement that claims to be open to everything. Everything. Open to liberalism, postmodernism, conservatism. Brian McLaren has a book, and on the dust jacket, it says, why I am a liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, blah, 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 blah. He's a long list of kind of oxymorons. I think that book is The Generous Orthodoxy, if I'm not mistaken. And yet he believes, listen again, it's not just a matter of coming and sitting in a pew and enduring 50 or 70 minutes of observing something happen. You can tell a lot about any kind of church movement by what it says about the rest of the church. So when you drive by a church and you see a sign that says, redefining church, they mean, well, we got to redefine it. It's in need of redefinition. The emergent church claims to be a neutral position, theologically, philosophically, in its approach. All of these movements do claim to be theologically neutral. They're not. None of them are. None. So you drive by a church and you see the sign outside that says, exciting worship. That's not only saying something about what they think is happening in their church, it says more about what they think is happening in every other church. I just can't wait for some church. This would really draw attention for some church to get wise and put up boring worship. Lackluster preaching. This place is chock full of sinners. We don't know what the heck we're doing. Lost sheep. Only sinners need apply. Something like that. You know, Paul says, I boast in my weakness. And a lot of these churches are out there boasting in what they think are their strengths. But when you boast in your strength, you, especially as a congregation, you're saying a lot more, or what you think is your strength, you're saying a lot more about everyone else than what you're saying about yourself. And you can see this. The modifiers, the adjectives, we've become a church of adjectives. Inspirational, enlivening, life-changing. The ultimate one, of course, is purpose-driven, which you have to endure 40 days to figure out what it is. Or emergent. Beware of this, I would say. Don't beware of labels. There's nothing wrong with a label. I mean, the word Christian is a label. The word Lutheran is a label. The word Baptist is a label. Beware of labels that don't claim to be labels. Beware of labels that say, you can't label us. Because they're not trying to tell you anything about who they are. At least a Lutheran church that says Lutheran is at least being, on the surface, honest about what it believes. It's trying to advertise clearly what it is it believes, or Baptist or Methodist or any other label that we use. But beware of labels that, rather than reveal what's going on in a church or attempts to hide what's going on in a church or obfuscate. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Am I reading the emergent church right? I know that there are lots of these emergent churches and e-services going on in the United States. This is the hot thing. Is there anyone out there who is familiar with an e-church? And is this, well, here's PBS trying to figure out what it is. I'm doing my best to try and figure out what it is. 505-7850-1800-730-2727.
Worship is participatory and multisensory. People are encouraged to tangibly express their spirituality. Many are weaving together elements from different religious traditions, especially Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy. Some are discovering medieval mystical practices, such as walking the labyrinth, but adding decidedly modern twists. It's a pick-your-own-mix approach that also stresses community and social justice.
More and more of us are feeling that if we have a version of the Christian faith that does not make us the kind of people that make this a better world, we really want no part of it.
There are similar practices in mainline Protestant churches, such as Cornerstone United Methodist Church in Naples, Florida. There, a blue jeans wearing, electric guitar playing minister leads a lively service that combines United Methodist tradition with high church liturgy and a Pentecostal flavor.
I joke around in saying that I'm more of a Methacathacostalite than I am a United Methodist. And I think that's because each of those traditions has added so much to my faith experience and my growth.
All right, that's Roy Terry, and he's the pastor of this church down in Naples, Florida. I like his term because he's being honest. At least he doesn't say emergent, which doesn't tell me anything. I mean, what if I came home and my wife says, honey, we need to talk about our marriage. Okay. And she asks me, dear, how would you describe our marriage? And I'd say, emergent. What does that mean? It's in the process of becoming. Oh. Can you give me any specifics? No. Everything's pretty, at this point, pretty tentative. You know, we've been married 18 years, by the way. Everything's pretty tentative at this point. I mean, I don't want to be pinned down with labels. And I would prefer to just leave it at that. And we'll see. In fact, honey, let's just make that the motto of our marriage and our relationship. We'll see. Do you take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? We'll see. Do you take your husband? Do you take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband? We'll see. I now pronounce you, well, have a happy life. For some reason, you know, should we see it applied to the kind of institutions like marriage? And we think, of course, that's ridiculous. But for some reason, we don't see how ridiculous it is when people try to apply it to an institution, a divine institution, like the church.
Historian of religion Diana Butler Bass has studied mainline congregations.
These mainline churches are as dissatisfied with their bureaucratic structures and their denominational structures as these emerging evangelicals are with the traditional patterns of setting up evangelical congregations. So they're on both sides of this conversation. They're reaching towards new kinds of structures.
And it's more than just worship style. Some, but not all in the emerging church movement, are urging profound theological reassessments. They advocate wrestling with traditional understandings of the faith rather than accepting pat answers.
It's more important for us to feel like we are representing a beautiful expression of our life with God than it is to be right about everything.
Many of these emergent voices are less certain of their theological ideas, and this appeals to a generation that is given to dialogue and to discussion and to conversation and not making firm judgments about people.
Okay. Again, some very broad-minded sounding sentiments from Pastor Doug Padgett. And there, Professor McKnight is just kind of saying, this is what we're dealing with in the emergent church. Here's Padgett again. It's more important for us to feel like we're representing a beautiful expression of our life with God than it is to be right about everything. Now, again, this is not a neutral position. Don't be mistaken about this, folks. What is a cardinal sin in the emergent church? Certainty. You can be anything or become anything theologically. No pat answers. Reassess everything. The only error, the only heresy, it appears. I mean, this is just the people talking themselves. The only heresy is being certain of what you believe. Now, you do see how this reflects our contemporary culture in spades. Don't get me wrong. I think that Tom Cruise is probably in need of some medication. Okay, don't get me wrong. That's my honest opinion about Tom Cruise. But why was he raked over the coals in his recent conversation with the Today Show host, Matt Lauer? Why? Because he was certain of what he believed. Now, what he believes is kooky, what he believes is strange, what he believes is very odd, but he was certain. He was absolutely certain. And you can't be certain in our contemporary culture, and it's wrong to be certain in the emergent church movement.
In some cases, McKnight says, they are challenging deeply held views.
They're asking questions about how we should understand our relationship to Scripture. Is it inerrant? Is it true? They're asking questions about what we should believe about the afterlife.
Brian McLaren has been especially provocative.
When we make it sound like we have all the bolts screwed down tight and all the nails hammered in and everything's all boxed up and we've got it all figured out, at that moment, I think we have stopped being faithful.
There is truth to be announced. If you start losing that, you really step outside what Christianity is. The gospel is something to be taught and to be believed. It is not something simply to be experienced.
Professor Don Carson of Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Illinois is among the evangelical leaders troubled by some emergent ideas. His new book critiques the movement.
Some in the emerging movement, so influenced by postmodern sensibilities, find any mention of truth, objective truth, angular or offensive. It might sound intolerant.
Emergent leaders say because the spectrum of their beliefs is so diverse, it's impossible to make sweeping judgments. Tony Jones, Emergent's new national coordinator, is not concerned by charges of theological sloppiness.
Is it more sloppy than what a systematic theology professor does, sitting in his tenured chair typing up a book on the doctrine of the atonement? Yeah, it's messier than that, but that's, I think, theology that works itself out in the lives of human beings who are kind of scratching and clawing their way to try to follow Jesus on a daily basis. It's a messy endeavor, and I embrace that messiness.
Still, even sympathetic observers say the movement faces big theological challenges.
I understand that many of them want to ask good questions, but for things to be Christian means that there are answers and there are limits to what those answers can be.
There are also questions about the extent to which the emerging church conversation will push out beyond a white middle-class movement to become truly diverse and global, and whether it will have a lasting spiritual impact.
The emerging church is a place of conversation and dialogue and movement. Where that's going to go, we don't know. We're figuring this out together. We don't have an agenda of what it looks like at the end of the road. We just want to gather up people on this road who want to go together on it.
And they believe that journey is just as important as a final destination. I'm Kim Lawson reporting.
All right. Now, we just finished listening to a report this weekend from PBS Religion and Ethics Weekly about the emergent church movement. They really got to the heart of the matter there in that last segment we played for you, and that is, what do they believe? What are the beliefs of the emergent church movement? Now, I know that the advocates of the emergent church movement, hearing me ask a question like that, will immediately respond, that's the wrong question. It shows that you fundamentally misunderstand what we're all about. Because we're not about beliefs, we're about experiencing the gospel as it works itself out in our lives, which seems to kind of substitute my life and my experience for any objective divine authority. Do you notice what was missing? Now, this was a PBS news report. That's to be understood. I think it was a fair one. I mean, as fair as it can be. But do you notice what was missing in when trying to probe what is at the heart of the emergent church and its message and its beliefs? What was missing from the advocates of the emergent church movement? Some glaring omissions, perhaps? I mean, anything, just kind of basic stuff like sin? The cross? I'm not talking about the symbol of the cross. I'm talking about the message of the cross. Lots of talk about the message, but not a lot of talk about what the message is, which is actually an endemic problem in the church nowadays. I mean, I've heard many sermons that tell me to go out and witness to my neighbor, but I am never told, ever, in those sermons, what I'm supposed to witness to. Go out and tell people. What? We'll get to that in our sermon series 10 weeks from now. Go out and preach the gospel. What's the gospel? The good news. What's the good news? Sorry, I don't have time to tell you that. Again, from Brian McLaren. When we make it sound like we have all the bolts screwed down tight and all the nails hammered in and everything's all boxed up and we've got it all figured out, at that moment, says McLaren, I think we've stopped being faithful. Sounds so broad-minded and so open-minded to everything. If you say something is, then you, by definition, according to McLaren's way of thinking, are wrong. You're not being faithful. For him, faithfulness is leaving everything untied and everything an open question and everything unanswered. Because the minute you say, what's the answer to this question, A, B, or C, it's B, he says, you've ceased to be faithful. Who do men say that I am? Peter's response, according to Brian McLaren, should have been, if he's going to be faithful, should have been, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time pinning that down. And I wouldn't want to give you a definite answer, Jesus, because then I would make it sound like I've got all the bolts screwed down and all the nails hammered in and everything's all boxed up and I've got you all figured out. No, I'm just asking you, who do you say that I am? Sorry, I can't tell you. You know what he's really done? He's redefined faithfulness. He's redefined faithfulness. Faithfulness is now, according to Brian McLaren, refusing to give an answer to that or any other question. Which is an odd sort of church. When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking with Bob Leko and the Word Faith Movement. Does God promise wealth and prosperity? We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.